Well, happy Friday. Man, we made it. It's a long weekend, Matt. It's like it was coming and coming and coming, and now it's finally here.
My favorite of the long weekends ever since, as far back as I can remember. Yeah. I've always loved Family Day.
I can't wait. It is 10:05. It is the midday show here on Rogers TV and 570 News on this Friday, February the 13th, by the way. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. I do want to start off with the news that Prime Minister Stephen Harper says that the government will be appealing a federal court ruling that would allow someone to take the oath of citizenship with their faces covered. A federal judge ruled last week that a portion of the law requiring citizenship candidates to remove their face coverings while taking the oath was unlawful. And Harper says taking the oath with a covered face is just wrong. And I believe we have a clip here, Matt, of Prime Minister Stephen Harper. So this is him talking about that.
I believe, and I think most Canadians believe, that it is offensive that someone would hide their identity at the very moment where they are committing to join the Canadian family. This is a society that is transparent, open, and where people are equal. And that is just, I think we find that offensive. That is not acceptable to Canadians. And we will proceed with action on that.
All right. So there's Prime Minister Stephen Harper. Now, the case had been brought forward by Zunaira Ishak, a Pakistani national who sued the Minister of Citizenship and Immigration, claiming that the government's policy on veils violated the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Now, Ishak wants to be allowed to take the oath of citizenship while veiled. She told the court, quote, "I feel that the government policy regarding veils at citizenship ceremonies is a personal attack on me, the identity as a Muslim woman, and my religious beliefs." And joining me on the line this morning is Karisma Mathan, who is an associate professor, constitutional law, criminal law, and comparative civil liberties at the University of Ottawa. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for doing this. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great.
When you hear the Prime Minister talking about this appeal, what are your thoughts on that?
It's very interesting. I mean, it's obviously happening in a period when we're having a lot of debate about religion and the place of religious freedom in our society. And what's interesting is the focus of the Prime Minister and the government on the citizenship ceremony as being particularly important and symbolic. And of course, I think one of the things this case shows is that there are different ways we can actually look at the citizenship ceremony and what it actually signifies. And in this case, the federal court took a very different perspective about what kind of values we should be promoting through that ceremony.
You know, when I first heard this, my mind right away went to, why can't we just identify somebody privately before a public ceremony and then just get on with the public ceremony?
Well, and I think that's exactly, that's a good point. If to the extent that there are actually concerns about fraud or identity misappropriation, those can be dealt with other than in the public ceremony. And, of course, in our society, we do have the right to express our religious beliefs. And I think one of the things the court pointed out is that, in fact, the citizenship ceremony should be a place where we have the most freedom to express those beliefs rather than, as the Prime Minister suggests, one where we should conform to what a majority thinks is offensive or not offensive.
Well, what are your thoughts on the Prime Minister's comments on the fact that, he stated that he believes that most Canadians will take a look at this and say that, if you're joining the family, Canada, as he put it, we should be able to see your face. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know how most Canadians would think about that. I think that it's true that many Canadians would find the practice of covering one's face very foreign, and it's not something that we actually see in our society a lot. The point of religious freedom, of course, is that it does allow people to adopt religious practices that are different from the mainstream as long as they don't harm society as a whole. And there is no absolute right to religious freedom. But, it's interesting to ask, why does it stop with the citizenship ceremony? If it's that offensive, then should there be steps taken to prevent people from covering their faces in other places? Like, I'm not sure where the logical endpoint is for the Prime Minister's argument.
What kind of other places do you mean?
Well, in public, in schools, in all kinds of other places. I mean, if it's offensive,
right?
If we as members of the Canadian family, should have a responsibility to disclose our identity in that way through our faces. Why stop at the citizenship ceremony? I don't think the Prime Minister is actually going that far, but it's interesting to ask the question, why?
Yeah, and it's interesting because essentially what the Prime Minister is saying is that, we want you to take off your face covering for this particular public ceremony, but then when you walk out the door, you can put it back on and away you go. So, you're right. Where it's interesting to ask that question and where will it end, right?
Well, that's right. And obviously, I think the government puts a great deal of importance on the citizenship ceremony, which it should. It's a highly symbolic event. But what are the values that we should be promoting? The Prime Minister seems to be suggesting that there's a general social consensus about what's offensive and what isn't. And even if a practice is actually protected under our charter, it can be offensive to society as a whole. I think there's a real tension in that statement.
But why do you think the Prime Minister is suggesting that that is offensive? That it's offensive to have your face covered in that particular case? Why is that something that's offensive?
One can only speculate, but I suppose it's that it indicates a desire to separate yourself from society and also the suggestion that it indicates a subordinate role for women.
Mm-hmm. It is a very interesting. It's very interesting. We'll see. Do you see this appeal? I mean, how long could this take? And what do you see the outcome happening?
Well, the appeal, depending on how high it goes, of course, could take a couple of years to be ultimately resolved. I think that the case law would tend to support the federal court's ruling here in that while you can infringe on religious freedom, you need sound reasons. And merely symbolic reasons are generally frowned upon because they can be very abstract and they can, in fact, allow a majority to impose its views on a minority group.
All right, Carissima, thank you so much for your time this morning. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right, Carissima Mathen right there, who is with the University of Ottawa, Associate Professor of Constitutional Law, Criminal Law, and Comparative Civil Liberties. So we know that the Prime Minister says the government will appeal a federal court ruling that would allow someone to take the oath of citizenship with their faces covered. The case was brought by Zunera Ishak, who is a Pakistani national who sued the Minister of Citizenship and Immigration, claiming the government's policy on veils violated the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Ishak wants to be allowed to take the oath of citizenship while veiled. She told the court, quote, "I feel that the government policy regarding veils at citizenship oath ceremonies is a personal attack on me, my identity as a Muslim woman, and my religious beliefs." And there is a response from a spokesman for the citizenship and immigration minister, Chris Alexander. He responded by saying, quote, "New citizens are obliged to confirm their identity when taking the oath of citizenship. It is simply common sense to require the removal of facial coverings or other items that hide a new citizen's mouths from view." And my question is, why can't you just confirm the identity seconds before allowing people into a public room to have a public ceremony? Why can't we just go and confirm the identity? We could easily do that, have someone confirm the identity of everyone that has a face covering outside in private somewhere in a different room, and then just open up the door to a public ceremony and have them go. I mean, what is this really all about? Here's a couple of things to consider, too. In many ways, I believe the real question here is, or should be, is the niqab in this particular case, is it an article of clothing that's religious or cultural? Is it a religious article of clothing? Is it a cultural article of clothing? And I would like to suggest to you that it is cultural and not religious. The niqab was in existence before Islam, and some sects of Islam not only reject the niqab, but the hijab as well. And as I understand it from everything that I read this morning, the Quran only says women should dress modestly, nothing about the niqab or the hijab. So it's an interesting one. Should the government be fighting this ruling, do you think? Is this something the Prime Minister should be taking on and say, look, if you're going in to take a public oath in the citizenship ceremony, your face must be uncovered? Well, why can't we just do that in a private room minutes before where it's not something that someone would you know, not be against. I mean, if you have to wear one of these things, why aren't you just confirming the identity of someone minutes before and then bringing them into the citizenship ceremony? That's public, having just confirmed their identity. It's the Midday Show. Phone lines are open. We'll take your calls and your emails coming up next here on Rogers TV and 570 News.
Being a parent is a round-the-clock job. So if you missed today's parent report on 570 News, you can listen anytime on the audio page at 570news.com.
Prime Minister seems to be suggesting that even if a practice is actually protected under our charter, it can be offensive to society as a whole. I think there's a real tension in that statement.
570 Midday continues with Eric Drost.
All right, welcome back. 10:19 on the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News. That is Carissima Mathen, an associate professor at the University of Ottawa. Zanera Ishak was scheduled to become a Canadian citizen last year. She came to Canada in 2008 and in late 2013 passed the citizenship test. All that remained was for her to take the oath. It's a public ceremony, of course, as we all know. I took the oath. I'm originally from Poland. I was born in Poland. I took the oath years ago. It is a public ceremony. That was all that was left for her to do. She was ready to do that. There was a problem, though. She wears a niqab, which, if you don't know, is the head covering that where you can only see the eyes. The other one that goes around the head where you can see the face is a hijab. It's worn by some Muslim women. So she didn't want to take that off. And she says that she feels the government policy regarding veils at citizenship oath ceremonies is a personal attack on her identity as a Muslim woman and her religious beliefs. Prime Minister Stephen Harper says there will be an appeal to the federal court ruling that would allow someone to take the oath of citizenship with their faces covered. And here it is again, Prime Minister Harper. Before we go to the phone lines, here is Prime Minister Stephen Harper's comments on the matter.
I believe, and I think most Canadians believe, that it is offensive that someone would hide their identity at the very moment where they are committing to join the Canadian family. This is a society that is transparent, open, and where people are equal. And that is just, I think we find that offensive. That is not acceptable to Canadians. And we will proceed with action on that.
So that's very interesting, because what the Prime Minister is saying, you have the right. You have a right here in this country to practice your religion, but I find your niqab offensive. So therefore, you should have to take it off during an oath of citizenship. I find that to be very interesting. Do you feel like the federal government should be fighting this ruling? Phone lines are open. 519-570-2545 is our local number. If you're from out of town, 1-800-570-5715, *570 by cell and by email. Eric at 570news.com. This is Mohammed on the line. Hi, Mohammed. Go ahead.
Hi, Eric. I think the government is making a big deal out of it. You know, you can definitely, like you said, you can definitely, someone can confirm her identity just before the oath ceremony. So mm-hmm. I don't see any issue there. And I'm sure that person will happy to confirm her identity before the oath ceremony. So it's just, you know, I don't know if it's a politics or what, but I think government is making a big mistake.
All right. I appreciate the comments. Thank you. Larry is on the line. Larry, should the government be fighting this ruling?
I'm in agreement with Stephen Harper. This is Canada. We have a strong separation between church and state. We do have freedom of religion, but we also have a lot of other freedoms. For instance, a Muslim could marry a Catholic or a Jew if he or she wanted to in this country. And I find that a lot of people, when they immigrate to Canada and become citizens, maintain the prejudices that they had against women, and say sexual minorities is another example, that they are brought up within their own country. They still hang on to those when they become citizens here. And those things are also in our charter. You can't have everything your own way in Canada. You have to agree with everything in the charter, not just be selective as to what you want to abide by. It's a different country, different type of government. We're not based on religious teachings in this country. We're based on humanistic principles. It's
a total
different ball game.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the comments, Larry. And sometimes I do wonder about that, though. Amanda is in Cambridge. Hi, Amanda. Go ahead.
Good morning. The way I see it is the fact that she even knows what the Canadian Charter and Rights is all about, and the fact that she can kind of navigate around it, makes her a little bit more Canadian than even me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even know about the Canadian Charter of Rights and freedoms and all that kind of stuff. And the fact that she's taking time to know all this stuff, I mean, like, heck, she's Canadian as far as I'm concerned. Wear your veil. In the end result, the person that is stated on that paper is the person that's going to become a Canadian citizen. So even if she had somebody stand in for her,
yeah,
I mean, what's the big deal? I mean, the end result is still going to be the end result, no matter who's behind that veil.
Well,
and as far as I'm concerned, she knows more than I do, and I'm Canadian.
All right, Amanda, interesting comments from you. Thank you for that. Gary is on the line. Gary, should the government be fighting this ruling?
Well, legislatively, Gary, it's a very touchy subject to me. First of all, the Prime Minister is one of my special people. But in this case, yes, I definitely believe in him. We here in Canada have taken in them consistently and have in the past taken in a lot of immigrants, and that's a good thing. But if there's an old saying, when in Paris or when in Rome,
mm-hmm.
when in Rome, I think, if you want to practice your own religion in Canada, do it. Do it home. Do it in your family group. But don't push it on me. I remember last year or the year before last, the Muslim community was trying to change the Merry Christmas to Happy Holidays and remove Christmas-type things in malls and stuff. That I totally disagree with. We are Canadian. If I went to Russia or any Arab country, I would expect to respect what they do. You know what I mean? And as far as covering your face, you were right. I heard you say before, it's a culture thing. Yes, you're right. It is a cultural thing. It's not in the Quran.
Right.
Dress modestly. So it's got nothing to do with religion. Let's say it's cultural. So leave your culture. If you want to live like that, act like that, have those privileges, stay in your Muslim country. It's very nice to turn.
All right.
I know that sounds mean. But,
no, I got you. I thank you for the phone calls. I just got a lot of emails to get to here. Andre says, in an interesting comments from Gary, Andre says, I'm with Stephen Harper on this one. I think that such a barbaric religion practice should not be presented in any case, especially when you are becoming a Canadian citizen. If we allow this to happen, we will show them that we have no backbone here in Canada, and slowly they will introduce Sharia law. I don't know if it'll go that far, but thank you for the email, Andre. Mike says, I agree with the government. Should confirm an identity of anyone joining Canada. Canada is free in a lot of senses, but the freedom still has to be protected. Allowing people to hide their identity just creates a loophole where the wrong people could enter and abuse our system. It really has nothing to do with the women in question. And to your point, Mike, if that's the case, then why is it such a big deal that they're wearing the niqab during the citizenship ceremony, but as soon as they walk out the door, the Prime Minister's not doing anything about it? I mean, if he's so offended by somebody wearing a niqab during a citizenship ceremony, where is he going to go after that? I mean, where is this going to stop? You can easily confirm someone's identity minutes before a public ceremony. You could do that privately. And I'm sure people would be willing to do that if we said we have to confirm your identity before you can take a public oath. This is from Jim. No, that has, let's see here. That's not Jim. This is Tina. In no way do I agree with Stephen Harper. I also agree with the way you suggested that we do it. I do understand that these women who cover their faces and they only see the eyes, from my understanding, their faces can be uncovered with another woman, not a man involved. And so that's part of it. I do agree with that. An email here, no name, but it says, do we consider that Muslim women are raised in a culture where they must and are used to covering their faces? How would you feel if you had to stand in a room full of people and expose your body? Would that that you believe must be covered? And that's an interesting point as well. Here's Ronald. We'll end off on this one because I love this email. Abolish all religion in Canada. Problem solved. You can mail me a check for fixing things. Thank you very much for your email, Ronald. We're back with much more as the Midday Show continues right after this here on Rogers TV and 570 News.
Today, we live in a 24-hour news cycle. Things are changing every second. Sign up for 570 News Breaking News Alerts at 570news.com.
10:35 here on the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News. Thanks so much for being along. The TV station that some called Fox News North is no more. The Sun News Network pulled the plug overnight without fanfare. Last December, a report in the Globe and Mail quoted a source who said that Zoomer Media was negotiating to acquire the network from Quebecor. Zoomer Media operates media aimed at the over 45-year-old demographic. Sun News featured sometimes controversial conservative views with an array of pundits. And our John Stahl has some of the details as to why, perhaps, and we'll talk about this more at length, but why Sun News may have failed.
Lots of debate over whether it failed because its right-wing programming brand couldn't attract enough of an audience to sell into the advertising market, or that not enough people could find that right-wing brand or get it because regulators wouldn't give it the mandatory carriage on basic cable that would allow more people to find and maybe like it. In a statement released this morning, the network said it failed to find a buyer who would or could keep it afloat, so it had no choice but to pull the plug. As you say, no on-air announcement was made this morning. The channel just faded to black about 5 o'clock before being replaced by the Sun TV logo. It went on the air in April of 2011, employed about 150 full-time staff and up to 50 freelancers. Here is one of the last show sign-offs on Sun TV from last night before the plug was pulled.
You can join the conversation at facebook.com/Brian Lilly or email byline@sunmedia.ca. And remember, we're on your side.
John Stahl, 570 News.
All right, so our John Stahl right there with some of the details behind the fact that Sun News Network pulled the plug overnight. And it was quietly done, which I find very interesting. Now, Richard Zarosky normally joins us, of course, for the Science Files on Thursdays. But, you know, Richard is an author of a book called Media Mediocrity, Waging War Against Science. He's quite vocal about the way media depicts news today. And Richard joins me on the line. Hey, Richard, how are you?
Good morning. It is a pretty good morning this morning. I'm pretty happy to hear about this.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that you say that. I don't think that, you know, there are many people out there that are completely saddened by the fact that Sun News Network pulled a plug overnight. Although, you know, some people have said, look, even though I didn't agree with their take on things, even though I didn't watch them very often, having them there still strikes some kind of balance in Canadian media in terms of having all sides of an issue explored. What are your comments on that?
Well, in actual fact, it's doing a disservice to journalism to state it in that context. That's my central premise, that if you're looking for honest journalism, what you're looking for is a wide diversity of representative views, not skewed views, not vested interest views, not views that you want because your advertisers want that. The journalistic concept is basically wrapped around pro and con. So somebody says you're guilty, you look for someone who says you're innocent, and then you let the viewer or the listener or the reader make that decision. That's called journalistic balance. When you start to skew that by taking topics like, and I'll throw anti-vaccination out there, or climate change, and that's really the heart of my book, or even tobacco use. When you have vested interest coming in and saying, okay, there's another side here, you're not representing things accurately. And by presenting things in that way, you're deceiving the viewer, the listener, the reader into thinking that there is a valid argument. You're actually manufacturing arguments, manufacturing consent, manufacturing point of view. And for that, I think Sun News has done an incredible disservice over the years that it's been on the air, because it's been deliberately skewing all the news reports, not representing them accurately. In other words, giving an unbiased approach. Its editorials were put in such a way that you could confuse them for news, that you can confuse them for actual events. And it did its best to conceal the truth as opposed to expose it. So, no, I am not shedding a tear. I shed a tear for those who needed work. But on the other hand, this type of work is not doing our culture any good.
I don't disagree with what, I mean, I agree to a certain extent with what everything that you just said. Just to play devil's advocate, though, I mean, what about, you know, there are those people that'll say, well, the reason why Sun News is around is because there are, you know, journalists who saw an area and thought, you know, the lefties, as you know, many of the media sources out there today are called the lefties, the liberals, the progressives, whatever you want to call them. I've been labeled one by a few callers, but, you know, some people say, well, the Sun News only came around because there's already an existing bias in the media, but from the left-hand side.
Well, you see, again, that's skewing the entire thing. That's not why Sun Media came about. Sun Media came about not because there was a need for it, and that's supposing that there was. And also the labeling of things is skewing the news. Calling you a lefty, you're hardly a communist, and you're hardly on a left-wing side. But once we start labeling things like that, we actually skew the news and skew how it's being presented. And that was an additional problem with that. And saying that all the studies are telling us that the news is not left-wing at all, that is a right-wing construct. And to say that Fox News sprang out of a need is like saying in the 1920s, somebody invented antiperspirant because people were complaining about underarm deodorant. No, they weren't. They actually marketed the fact that maybe you might want to be worried about this, and then provided a solution for business reasons. And it was purely a business solution. And Fox News did the same thing. It's basically the antiperspirant of underarms. There wasn't really a need for it, and I think the fact that the viewership was measured in the low thousands really told the story. It really didn't matter where you would put Fox News on the dial. Its content skirted the most outrageous presentation of the news, which I think actually insulted most Canadians. That's why they didn't watch it.
Richard, why does something like this work in the United States but not here in Canada?
Well, it didn't work until the right wing linked itself up with the evangelical right wing movement, the Christian religious right movement. And there's plenty of books and papers that have been written about this successful marriage between right wing religious interests and business interests. And that's really what has stirred things. And in many ways, that's what happened with the Reform Party and the Conservative Party. It doesn't take much of a stretch to take a look at the successes there. And once they were able, and they're very effective at mobilizing their groups. So their penetration within their group in order to sway public opinion has been huge. And we are vulnerable to advertising. Propaganda has been effective since Joseph Goebbels, and we've learned a lot since that time. And whether we like that reference or not, it's quite true.
Richard Zarosky, author of Media Mediocrity, joins us on the Midday Show on Rogers TV and 570 News. It's 1043. Sun News Network pulled a plug overnight, and they did it quite quietly. Richard, any surprise there that nothing was made off of this? They just kind of pulled the plug?
Well, I think this is also a typical thing that happens often with stations that are not successful. They go off into the night quietly, and the adage is they go out with a whimper, not a bang. And the fact that the people that they lost $30 million is something that somebody needs to look at. Like, who's footing the bill here? Why were they footing the bill? Why were they interested in losing all this money? And why was this an extension, basically, of right-wing interests, religious interests, demagogues, conservative interests, ultra-conservative interests? I don't think that there was anything served to make an announcement. And I think it shows the duplicity to the people that it employed, in that it just came in one day. And in the dead of the night at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I hate to use this analogy, but it's appropriate that when the secret police arrest someone, they arrest someone in the dead of the night to unsettle the population. and to keep other people quiet. And they didn't want people to know about this. I hate to be that cynical, but I really think that is it.
Richard, before I let you go, and let me put, this will put this news station under the gun to an extent as well, but let me get your thoughts, your overall thoughts on a grading, if you will, on media in this country. What is your grading?
Well, unfortunately, we are among the most consolidated of all media in the Western world. We have a very weak public sector. We have financing that is the lowest among the G8 per capita for financing of public broadcasting of all sorts. And we have provinces where there's only one media outlet for newspapers. In New Brunswick, it's only the Irving family that owns all newspapers, so you don't get any diversity in the news. And it's really important for a healthy society to have that. So I would grade us at about D+.
A D plus. Wow. Okay. Yeah, so a pass. We're passing. That's good.
Well, not in my class, you wouldn't be. If you got a D plus in my class, it'd be time to take something else. Yeah. Unfortunately, we're on that cusp where we're seeing additional consolidations. And we were talking, or Sun News was talking, with Zoomer Media. And Zoomer Media is busy consolidating. It's growing. And we don't have local voices anymore. You are one of the few. Talk radio is one of the few local voices where you can actually hear local news. And I will give kudos to Rogers for that, not only because they pay me and you, but because that we do have talk news radio and that they are interested in local news and sports and weather. And that's an important facet. If we don't reflect our local cultures and have a consolidated media that's vertically integrated, we're manufacturing consent and we're not far off totalitarianism.
Richard, always good to get your thoughts. Thank you so much. Have a great one.
You too, Eric. Take care.
All right. Richard Zarosky right there, author of Media Mediocrity. We do have, let's see here, Ted is on the line. Ted, let's get your comments. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Richard was kind of a little bit all over the map there. He gave the media a D+ with diversity, and we're verging on totalitarianism. But he was made some interesting comparisons to the Sun News Network and was hypercritical of them on what they provided to our culture. So I'm kind of having a hard time to follow him. I initially was interested in any type of new type of. That's what, the wonderful part about the internet. You can find differing opinions.
Obviously, yeah.
You don't have to have the traditional 1970s Canadian outlook where you turn on you watch the CBC and then the Beachcombers and you go to bed, right? So I think that's the comparison. I think that's really unique in Canada because if you travel or go or look around the world, many states. Like, we have a state broadcaster, which is akin to other socialist nations like Korea or Cuba, and rightly so, because we're a bare nation, and the North needed to be provided with news, and there's multiple of media conglomerates that have closed down. You know how TV and radio has been shrinking over time because they're private, right?
Sure.
You can't keep TV stations open anymore in small places like Owensound or Goderich or Wyarton or Wingham, or at least have local TV, right? So that's kind of, Sun News has kind of fell into that they have to make a profit, right? They're not funded like the CBC through our tax dollars, right? I just did a cursory search, though. Fox News is the highest rated news outlet in the United States. It's CNN that's had to cut back on their on a lot of their budgets, right, and lay people off. And right now, NBC, that's why Brian Williams is hitting them so hard, is because they've been floundering too with record decreases in viewership and advertising, which fuels the news, right? In a democracy, right?
Yeah.
the only ones that are stagnant and provide the same, that D+ rating that I agree with him is the stagnancy of the CBC is not going anywhere because it's a big bloated governmental bureaucracy that's going nowhere. So they give one message, they get to choose the agenda. And if they choose to skew it towards the left, like you said, you know, which sometimes it is, and a lot of times it's a big social justice narrative, right? Sometimes people get tired of that and need other opinions because
well, yeah, and with the advent of the internet,
about, right?
With the advent of the internet too, Ted, you can get a lot of different views there as well. Sorry, I had to let you go there. 2 minutes and 30 seconds. I think is that a record for Ted? I know I was criticized for cutting him off last time. So there you go. If you're on hold, we'll get to your phone calls coming up next as the midday show continues on Rogers TV and 570 News.
There's never a dull week on Parliament Hill. We've got you covered on the week's events with McLean's on the Hill political podcast, available online on 570news.com.
The fact that the viewership was measured in the low thousands really told the story. Its content skirted the most outrageous presentation of the news, which I think actually insulted most Canadians. That's why they didn't watch it.
570 Midday continues with Eric Drost.
All right. Well, does Richard Zorosky have a point? Was Sun News insulting too many Canadians? Is that the reason why they couldn't attract viewers? Why does it work in the U.S.? Why doesn't it work here in Canada? Phone lines are open. 519-570-2545 is our local number. Out of town, 1-800-570-5715. *570 by cell. The email is eric@570news.com. Lee, thanks so much for your phone call. Go ahead.
Well, a couple things. I think your guest is obviously on the left side of things, no doubt about that. And he talks about how he gives our media a D-plus in Canada because it's not diverse enough. And yet we have a wonderful right-wing network that he criticizes. And the thing that I like most about Sun News, and I'm very sad it's gone, is that their pieces were opinion pieces. The CBC, for example, does their opinion pieces in the news. And that is what's scary about journalism in Canada.
Thanks very much for the phone call. See, I mean, I would argue that the other way. I think there were many opinion pieces on Sun News Network that were trying to be passed off as news. From my experiences, I would argue that the other way. Jersey Bill, are you sad to see Sun News Network go dark?
In a way, I looked at it. I really liked David Aitken's political show. I thought he was very balanced in his presentation. But the truth of the matter is, and you want to compare Fox News to Sun News, the difference is Pierre Péladeau, who did have deep pockets, has decided to go into politics trying to become the leader of the Parti Québécois, which isn't a good fit with a conservative network like that. And he wasn't funding, he wasn't standing behind his TV product. They already jettisoned his English newspapers. Whereas Fox, who stood behind Fox? Rupert Murdoch. And he stood behind it until it became profitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Thanks for the phone call, Jersey. I want to get Bob on the line now. Hi, Bob. Are you sad to see Sun News Network go dark?
In a way, I used to watch it. I thought it was awfully one-sided. In fact, they didn't call it Sun News. They said Sun means politics on their shows.
Mm-hmm.
And they slant their shows to get their points across because they were talking about fracking, and they did a series, and they were trying to beat that home, that it was the best thing to ever happen. And, no, there was more opinion on that show than news, really. And I'm kind of sad. The only show I really liked on that station was Michael Corrin.
Mm-hmm.
I found him awfully interesting, but the rest of it, no. I watched less and less as the time went on. And they were on basic cable at one time. They were on Channel 15.
Yeah. All right, Bob, thanks for the phone call. Andre says, Sun News was the only one that went after the politicians, uncovered the truth. There's only one that went after Kathleen Wynne to find out, and she's hanging around pedophiles, and that she wants to introduce disgusting laws to teach our kids in grade one how to have anal sex. See, this is what I'm talking about. I mean, it's that kind of stuff. I mean, if that is your take, Andre, on all the news that's been presented about Kathleen Wynne, that her pledge to change the education curriculum is to teach your child to have anal sex in grade one. This is, I think, why many Canadians look at that. If that's what you're saying, Sun News was saying, that's not going to fly here. It's not going to fly here because it's so friggin' easy to just boil down an argument to either black or white. Guess what? Things aren't that simple. And it takes a lot more work to get both sides of a story on a show, both perspectives on a show, and then make up your mind based on that rather than, for example, when Justin Trudeau was asked by a very light leaning radio host whether he would ever commission boots on the ground against ISIS. he said, well, let me answer that. And he took a couple minutes to answer it without saying yes or no. And that was painted off as, well, he doesn't have the integrity or leadership to run this country because he didn't give me a yes or no answer. War is complicated. War takes a couple of minutes to answer. It's not a yes or no answer. And it's so much more easier to just boil something down to a yes or no or black and white. And if it's, you don't answer it that way, well, then you don't have leadership. So anyway, Sun News Network's off the air. They've gone dark. 200 people out of a job. That is the sad part for me, because I know that this journalism field is not very large. And another 200 people out of work does not help anything out. 10:58 on the midday show. We're back with much more on Rogers TV and 570 News.